The Pro Tools Expert Podcast with Russ Hughes and Dan Cooper.
Well, good evening and welcome to Pro Tools Expert Podcast 315. It's April 23rd, 2018. I'm Russ Hughes.
I'm Dan Cooper.
And I'm Kevin Becker.
Great. Well, welcome to tonight's show. Kevin, what deals do we have, if any?
We don't have any deals to offer this month, but you can also check out the rest of the deals from our partners in the Partners Deals section of the Deals page.
Good. Good. Should I declare that I'm eating a cranberry yogurt while we're doing the show? It's not sponsoring the show. Can I mention that? It's just keeping me going. Anyway, check out our deals section. It's always a good place to look and find some hot deals. Dan also did a great story in the last 7 days, which was all about where to find deals, and people have been dropping their tips in there as well. So check out that story. Anyway, let's move on to our talking points. As ever, they're sponsored by our friends at Universal Audio. Over to you, Fab.
Good morning, children. This is Fab DuPont. The Pro Tools Expert Podcast talking points are brought to you with the support of Universal Audio.
Do your recordings need more shine? Are you in the market for a new audio interface? Well, if the answer to those questions is yes, now could be a very good time to buy a Universal Audio Apollo Twin as part of UA's new Apollo Twin Platinum Vocal promotion. Buy an Apollo Twin Mark II Solo and get Antares Auto Tune real time free. Buy an Apollo Twin Mark II Duo or USB and get Antares Auto Tune and the Manly Vox Box plugins free. Or buy an Apollo Twin Mark II Quads and get Antares Auto Tune, Manly Vox Box and Pure Plate Reverb plugins all for free. Not bad. So you can find out more about this and other deals the Universal team are running by checking out their website or by clicking the link in the podcast notes.
It says it's uad.com/twin vocal promo. It sounds like a Milli Vanilli link, doesn't it? Do you remember those guys?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They were accused of not singing on their own tracks.
They were caught red-handed, as it were.
So, yep. Well, although that's a novelty these days, isn't it, if somebody does sing on their tracks?
Yeah, so right, exactly.
In those days, it was hot news. Shocking. But these days, it's like, you really sang that track? Hey, talking point number one. Dan, you did a great story on studio security. Tell us about it.
Well, yeah, there's something I didn't talk about when I finished the studio, because I wrote those articles of how I built the thing, and I forgot to cover one of the most important things, really, about studio build, and that's keeping all your gear safe. So, yeah, I just sort of spoke about some things that I've done with my room, you know, alarm system, lots of locks on the door, making sure that from the outside of the building that it doesn't look like that there's expensive gear inside. So, you know, it's... It just looks like a normal sort of UK garden cabin. You know, you could just have some garden furniture in it and a lawnmower. Just sort of threw some points out there of how I keep this place safe. I remember you, Russ, when you finished off your studio build, you turned your studio into Fort Knox a little bit as well, didn't you?
Yeah, in all sorts of ways. Some of the stuff I don't think was in your article that I'd mentioned in my original article. It's interesting because around the table tonight, two of us are kind of like home, the modern version of a professional studio to some degree, which is the kind of guy working out of his garden kind of thing, or working out of his loft. And then you've got Kevin, which I'm sure can talk to this in a different way, in a commercial facility, which has probably got bigger security than Fort Knox, but he can talk about that in a while. Some of the simple things are really good. So, for example, this lighting all over my house. I can't even get to my studio without all the security lighting coming on. I've always read in articles about burglary around the home or burglary around a business, is that what you're trying to do is make your steal as unattractive as possible. So all the gates to my property are padlocked at night. So I think I added padlocks as well, as so we got locks that, like Yale locks on our gates. So if you got over the fence, you could actually open them from the inside. But what I added to that then was padlocks as well. So if you get in, you can't get out if you haven't got the key. You've still got to go back over the fence. So there's that, and there's lighting. And the other thing, if you remember, I talked about it before, there's gravel all the way around my studio, because when you walk on gravel, it makes a noise. you can't, and it was just a conscious decision I had. It's really noisy, so make sure you're not doing a vocal take when somebody's walking towards the studio, because it really does gravel when people walk on it, especially at night. And of course, I've got a furry alarm system as well, which is my dog. So any noise, he starts barking. So there's lots of simple, cost-effective ways of protecting your property if you work from a home studio, if you've got a facility in a complex and stuff like that, like lighting, like stopping, making access hard, whether that's with locks or whether that's with gravel. So those are the kind of, and then I've got I don't know if you remember, my studio is pretty glass orientated because it's a mixed room and a writing room. And I, heaven forbid that I lose the keys to my studio, because if I do, I can't get back in without somebody coming with some kind of welding equipment or a chainsaw, because it would be very hard to get into my studio without the keys, because it's aluminium, everything's made of aluminium, and it's all sealed. You cannot get the units out from the outside. It would take a demolition crew to get me back into my studio. So we have several copies of the studio keys in-house. Another small thing we do, and my wife's always had this as a policy, we never leave keys indoors at night or when we're not there. So we lock doors and remove the keys. So, you know, the idea that somebody could break the glass and reach in and get the key? Can't do that. We don't leave keys around either. So, and we don't leave them on a table next to the door either. So
well,
that you can't get to
them. I've got three keys for my studio door, and they're three different locks. And I leave those keys in different places around the house. They're not on one.
Good ring. Idea.
Do you know what I mean? Just something like that. If someone knew that this was here, and I thought, I'm going to have a go at that, but I can get into the house, whatever. I can find those keys and I can get into that studio down the end of that garden there, which probably got 100 grand's worth of gear in it. That's worth a go. Well, good luck.
And finally, I have a canary system, which is a kind of like wireless camera system, which I can look at from my iPhone and my iPad. Also, it's sending it up to a server. So even if you stole the camera in an effort to stop people knowing what you've been up to, it's all backed up in the cloud. You can't get to it. Only I can see it. So if Sony did manage to get into my studio, then I'd have a record of it. So, yeah, there's quite a lot of simple stuff I do. I think the whole of the security on my studio, $1,000 or something like that. Yeah, but
peace of mind. Peace of mind, and
well, $40,000 worth of equipment inside it. So I think $1,000 to save
That's worth it.
Absolutely.
Well, if they took the 1176, it's paid for itself. Do you know what I mean? That's the kind of thing that's sitting in my rack. Kevin, you're in a commercial facility at Blackbird. I'm guessing there's quite a lot of hoops you have to jump through
before even paying
clients can get in the rooms.
Yeah, we have gates at both sides, and then doors with combinations. But a lot of the time, and especially in the summer, it's left open. I mean, it's horrible to say, but we trust a lot of people. But the worst crime problem we had was with somebody posing as an assistant, went to the front desk and said, "Hey, I talked to John. He said I should start as an assistant." And the night person said, "Oh, okay, we'll come back here." And basically had him doing a job, and then he took off and went and stole a laptop and some other stuff we don't even know. And we saw him on camera. He left about a half an hour later, but that was actually, he walked through the front door, you know?
Yeah.
So that kind of stuff happened. Then they had a horrible thing happen in Los Angeles, where these guys had an argument and somebody went to a gas station and got gas and lit a hallway on fire and two people died. And
be serious?
In a large studio with 12 rooms in the Coinga Pass in Los Angeles. So that, I don't even know how you'd keep that from happening, you know? So,
well, you can't. It's insanity, isn't it? If somebody's determined to hurt people or to damage property.
Yeah.
We're not going to get into the kind of debates we could do here, but anything can become a weapon at that point, can't it? Cars.
But I think on the commercial level, that's a whole different set of. We have cameras everywhere, and we bolstered our cameras once we had that guy come in. But on the home front, I mean, I had a rack of gear that I actually had put in the room before they put up the final wall, so it was too big to fit through the door. So there's no way they could even wheel my gear out of the room. And then I had I had screws in it that were special star screwdriver screws, you know, in my racks. So
she can't get the gear out unless you've got screwdriver.
Yeah, it would be too much trouble. So
yeah. I suppose you could run the head. If you weren't going to get them out very often, you could actually run the heads on the screws, couldn't you? So that.
Yeah. And then, I mean, then, if you want to do anything, you can get it out. But it's like, if it makes it difficult and more time they have to spend before the burglar alarm went off or whatever, you know.
Anything can slow people down. That's worth it. I mean, I've got my Mac Pro with a bike lock around the feet, around the back of my rack.
Oh, because, the old cheese grater.
Yeah, if you try to take the Mac out, you're going to be taking the rack with you, and that's got loads of stuff in it. And that weighs a ton, so you're not going anywhere with that. And it's just enough for a thief to go, that's not worth it. I'm going to leave it. In the worst case scenario, it's just on the floor and maybe a bit broken, but it's not gone anywhere.
Yep.
You know?
None of my assets sit on my computers either. So all of my work is somewhere else. It's all I spent $300 buying an optical Thunderbolt cable and all of my drives. So my Mac Pro is literally just a Mac Pro. All of that's backed up as well. So, and I've talked about this before, it's a different conversation, but if the worst should happen, the worst can't happen because it's not, the Mac is all backed up. So I can be up and running. It's all cloned. So I can be up and running in probably an hour. Wow. If somebody stole my Mac. And as I say, all of my drives, all of my work, which is client work. And so you've got to make sure that it's safe. Is somewhere else. So it's in a completely different part of the room, locked in a cabinet. And so you could steal my Mac and not steal any work off it. It would all be, in fact, if you took it and opened it, there's nothing there to take in terms of, I wouldn't have any breaches of client confidentiality and security.
What's the distance on that cable? I mean, how far
it's,
can you
it's
go?
It's the conning cable. I think it's called conning, the cable. Got it from America. Uh-huh. So up to 30 meters.
Oh, that's good.
So you could put it in a different room entirely.
Sure, like a fireproof cabinet or
whatever. Fireproof. Yeah. You could literally put it in a safe and then have it. So all of my I've got a Sonnet rack that's got all of my UAD cards in it. So that's kind of the benefit of the trash can in a way, that the trash can really can't contain anything really. So all of my important stuff, drives and cards and stuff, is somewhere else, hanging off the back of this single Thunderbolt cable. Which is great. So that's an important part of it as well. Because if you ain't got backups, if it's not backed up in three places, it's not backed up in my view.
That's true.
So two drives and a cloud. And that's important. The other piece of security, of course, I don't know how you feel about this, but it's just don't tell people it's there in the first place.
Yeah.
The less people that know about your facility, the better.
It's very true, but you know, if you are going to be doing attended sessions, you've got to be careful who you invite into your studio and property. I mean, the article I wrote, I shared a story of a friend from many years ago who we started our studios at the same time. I had a commercial room, and he had like a converted garage on the side of his house, and we were both doing the same thing. We're working with local songwriters or musicians or whatever. But he was mainly getting the rapper crowds and was charging silly money, like, you know, 10 quid an hour. And I was doing 30 quid an hour working with singer songwriters, and he was getting a bit of a dodgy crowd coming in, so to speak. And one day he thought he had a session. The guy turned up, or who he thought was this guy, this rapper turning up, and robbed him at knife point in his own house. Took his money, took some of his gear. This was in his first year of trading. And he told me this, and it shook me to the core. I was like, wow, this has happened a mile up the road from where my studio is. And, you know, awful that's happened with to him and in his house. And he advertised his studio, you know, this is my studio, it's my house. He had no insurance, he had no cameras, he had no nothing. And it shook him. It really did. It knocked his confidence in working late sessions, with working with people. He eventually went out of business. But I think that kind of, that's just not nice to hear these stories. And I know it did affect him. It took him a long time to recover from that and to trust people again. So you should always, you know, take security seriously. If you're a big studio, little studio, you're in the garden, you're in your house, whatever, you are going to end up working with musicians, or other guys. Just make sure you get to know them before you kind of, you know, invite them into your house and let them, you know, use your toilet and look around and all that sort of stuff. I think that's really important. don't feel like you can't have people around to work with you. Just be aware that you don't know there could be a chance or about or whatnot. Yeah.
That's really scary, actually. Yeah, I don't know if you'd recover from that personally.
No.
Mm-mm.
No. I mean, my dad's partner, she was she had her house broken into when she was living on her own, so it was just before my dad met her. And, some guy forced her door, walks into her kitchen. She didn't hear this because she was on a three-terrace house. She come downstairs, heard this noise, and there's this massive six-foot guy standing in her kitchen. And she froze. And he just walked past her and walked out of the house, and she just stayed there all night until she actually could ring someone after she got past the shock of it. It's just, whoa. I mean, nothing happened. I think it scared him, and he just walks away.
Because isn't the guy that stabbed the burglar near you that we've just seen in the news recently, Dan? He had the burglars in his house, and he had to protect his wife, and wasn't that around the corner from you somewhere?
I don't know. I haven't seen the news today, the last few days.
No, it was last few weeks. Abbey Wood, I think it was in, wasn't it?
Was it?
Which isn't far from you, I don't think.
No, it's not far. I'm not going to speak to that because no one knows how they're going to act in a situation like that until...
No, I wasn't suggesting we have a... I'm not suggesting we have a point of comment on it, but I just thought it was near you, yeah.
Scary.
So, it's an important subject, although, as they always used to say on that crime program, Crime Watch, don't have nightmares. So, the probability that something bad's going to happen to your studio is small, but at the same time... Be careful and be aware of the probability, because we do work in an attractive world where this stuff is easy to... The sad thing is, if somebody took my 1176, it would probably get punted for $50 for the drugs money, which is depressing. I'd rather give them the $50 than... Do you know what I mean?
But of course.
The kind of people that are going to break into our places and steal our gear have no concept of what they're stealing.
No,
often.
They're not going to use it to make music. That's
I wouldn't almost give me some tips. You've got to count your blessings at Blackbird if all they stole was a laptop, considering what you've got in your gear cupboards. Do you know what I mean?
Well, those are all locked in themselves, too, and we don't give keys except to trusted employees. But it was just weird that the guy showed up and, you know, we just took for granted that it was okay, and then, it's just a strange occurrence. So,
the worst situation I've been in with my studio security was about 7 years ago. I think it was 7 or 6 years ago. Those London riots. Do you remember them, Russ?
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. Well, my studio was in South London at the time, and it was all going off
in
Bromley.
Yeah, it was happening by us. Yeah,
it was happening everywhere. But then we got a tip off from the police saying, there's a riot coming down towards the high street within the hour. We know they're there and they're coming this way. We suggest, because my studio is at the back of a guitar shop, and we're like, oh crap, you know, this just happened in Croydon to Rock Bottom, you know, very popular, very famous guitar shop. They were completely gutted, and we're like, oh crap, they're coming for us. So the first thing I did was ring my insurance company. What happens if this happens? They said to me, well, it's an act of God, so there's not a lot you can do. I said, well, no, but if that's the case, I'm cancelling this tomorrow. and me and the other guys at the guitar shop business, we boarded up the windows. We did as much as we could. We spoke to a couple of friends in the area to come down and stand with us around the shop. We had, we had fire extinguishers, you name it, anything big and lumpy, just in case anyone had a go. Never have I been so scared.
I bet.
Luckily, nothing happened at all, but you know, oh dear, there's a threat here. And it was you know, when adrenaline is pumping so hard you can't blink, it's that. And luckily nothing happened, and it didn't. I slept in the studio that night, so did the governor of the shop, and the day after that we didn't open, so I lost a day's trade because of that. And just, it was just a horrible time. And I did cancel that insurance, and I've got another lot of insurance that actually did say, yeah, in those sort of events you are covered, as long as you've got like all your other security measures in place, like the locks that we require you to have and all these other bits and bobs. So yeah, I'll never forget those few days. But that was out of my control, and the whole high street was on high alert. So not just us, the jewelers, the alcohol shop, the liquor shop, the store next door, and just everyone was, what's going to happen? We're going to have our businesses broken into by a mob.
Because
it's happened everywhere else around here, you know, and there's nothing you can do except from stand back or, you know, get beaten up. So, Yeah.
Another thing as well is database your serial numbers. I'm guessing commercial facilities would do that, but like, I don't reckon that most home studios would take the time to database all their serial numbers, but it's well worth spending a few hours going across all your equipment, getting all your serial numbers, getting photographs of them as well. This would help with any insurance claims too.
Insurance, yeah, my one actually asks for that. So I do that anyway as part of the...
just do an inventory of all your gear. Because it's just well worth it. And one of the good things about social media these days is when some of these hit and runs happen in studios, that if they've got the serial numbers, it goes viral very quickly. So it kind of closes down the market quite significantly, doesn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, I've seen that a few times. And people have got stuff back as well. I say when somebody goes to punt a 1965 Neve EQ for $30 in a pawn shop, and the pawn guy knows, well, actually, this is worth $10,000. Yeah.
Right.
So not today, buddy. Hey, let's move on. Dan, competitions. What's the story?
We have one competition from our friends at Wave Alchemy, who are offering a chance to win one of 5 copies of their excellent Evolution drum instrument. The competition runs until the end of April, so hurry on over to the win page and don't forget to check out more opportunities to win Pro Audio software and gear from our partners in the partner win section on our win page.
Second talking point tonight, and this kind of goes round a lot, it's a conversation that's kind of ongoing. 7 tips for recording vocals. Our friends at Audient have had a guest article written by a friend of the blog, Nuno Fernandes, great producer, and he's come up with 7 things to sort of think about when producing great vocals. I'm going to start this with Kevin, actually, because you do a lot. Obviously, you do a lot of tracking, Kevin, and I was listening to some vocals you tracked the other day when you were talking about cleaning up vocals and stuff. So the energy, environment, microphone, polar patterns and proximity, tracking with effects, headphone mix and tuning software. Is there anything on there that you kind of would add to?
I have a lot of access to a lot of gear, but what I find is the biggest problem is finding the right combination of microphone and placement when you're recording. And we do this a lot here where there's an acoustic guitar, acoustic guitar is singing at the same time. It's either a demo situation or something where they really want to get a vocal that they can keep. So I've gone through many iterations of microphones and I find that a ribbon mic on the guitar itself, and the way I actually look at a microphone's pattern is, I think of it as a flashlight. You know, for instance, a cardioid. You know, you're going to get the most light out the front and a little bit more dissipation on the side. So, I'm facing the part that I want to reject at the other thing I don't want in my recording. For instance, like the guitar mic might have an odd angle because the back of the mic or the side, if it's a figure eight, is pointing towards the singer, you know, or the opposite. I would face the singer's mic so that the off axis part of that would be pointing toward the guitar. And then distance has a lot to do with it too, because if you had something that was perfectly in phase, with, you know, in both mics, it's okay, but it's the problem is when you bring up, you know, you bring up that vocal mic, it sounds great. You bring up that acoustic guitar mic, it sounds great with a little vocal in it, but you bring them both together and you get this tunnel effect on the vocal. So, I should probably do a production expert thing on that because I have a lot of good ideas on that. So,
yeah, it's another job for AutoAlign.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, I've never thought of using AutoAlign for that kind of problem. And would you, can I just ask in that situation, so I'm guessing the singer-songwriter, they've got an acoustic and they want to sing along with it to get the vibe.
Yeah.
Do you put a baffle quite close to the mic, to the guitar, so the room, not, so the room doesn't pick it up?
Yeah, so the rooms here are big enough where I don't have to do that, but in the smaller room, there's just no room for a baffle, you know? So we either have tiny rooms or like big rooms here. So
I love that room with all the red lights in it that you've got, like,
yeah,
hanging from the ceiling, kind of like the lanterns. Sort of, it's beautiful.
Yeah, that's Studio D. So yeah.
It's gorgeous.
But and the ISOs are really well isolated and it's pretty solid. But it's funny that a lot of these bands that come in that want to record really want to get the performance live with the band, which is great, you know.
Yeah.
But that makes my job as an engineer tougher because I'm thinking like, oh man, if he wants to keep this vocal, and it's like, you know, if it doesn't work, I go back at him and I say, look, here's the deal, you know, we could spend more time on this, but you're going to get less songs done. So let's just, you know, tomorrow let's replace that acoustic guitar and then and the vocal, and I guarantee you we'll have the same chain, it'll sound equally as good, but you're going to get better results that you're going to like better, and then, you know, that kind of thing. So there's no magic. It also depends on the player, how hard they play the guitar, how hard they sing. You know, it changes with every situation too. So you're constantly trying to figure that out.
Yeah. What about you, Dan? Is there any kind of thing that you think has been missed on this list?
Yeah. First and foremost is making sure that your talent is comfortable. It's really important just to make sure, just on a personal level, that they're happy with whatever is going on in the studio, that they're hydrated, that they're not too hot, not too cold, that the microphone's in a good position for them, if they've got lyrics, that they can see them clearly, that they're just, their surroundings are to their liking. All those things make a big difference. If you said to someone, you know, you're about to sing, you're like, just jump up on that microphone and just sing. And you hurry through it. They feel rushed, and they're not going to perform. It's nice just to say to a vocalist, don't forget to do a warm up. We should just do a warm up, do some, you know, get you comfortable with the microphone. That stuff's important. At least I've found working with my wife all the time and many other songwriters, it's just, you know, slow it down a little bit, make it all about them and just make sure everything's really, really good. Also, as well, if you are the guy tracking a vocalist or mixing vocals...
Or the girl, of course.
Or girl, of course. Have you ever been on the other side of the microphone? If you've never been on that side of the microphone being recorded, singing, try it. See how you like it. It'll be an eye-opener because it is a very different thing, performing into a microphone. There's so many factors at play. Can you hear yourself? Is the music too loud, too quiet? Do you like to record with a bit of reverb in your ears? So many things. Do you like being bossed around? Do you like being given pointers on how to sing a certain part? And just experience. It's good to be have an appreciation and an understanding for what the vocalist is doing on their side of the microphone if you are behind the mixing desk or behind Pro Tools. So try it. It's quite important. I mean, like my wife, she's been learning Pro Tools now for the last 6 months and she's been recording me, which is not a problem. I'm used to being the one recorded. But for her, she's learning what it's like to be me operating Pro Tools, recording someone. She goes, wow, you hear things like you never hear things before when you're recording someone else, and you feel like anticipation to get the best sort of recording. And I go, yeah, because you're the one producing this record. You're willing it along. That's what I do for a living. I'm not, you know, not just the one playing guitar. You want the guitarist to do a good job. So you encourage them. So yeah, that's a top tip. If you haven't recorded your own voice or let someone record you singing before, just give it a go. And you'll learn a lot about yourself and you'll learn a lot about the craft of vocal production.
I think is missing here is preparation, is that I do as much as I can beforehand so that when the vocalist enters the studio, we're ready to roll. Mics are up, gears up, headphone mixes set as best as I can before they get in there, because you want to make it as normal as possible, which it isn't, especially for new vocalists and people who, or anybody going into studios. So many people get red light fever, don't they?
Yeah.
They're ace vocalists. And the minute you say, okay, here we go, 3, 2, go. So the two things I do is A, preparation. Then we do some warm-up tracks and I usually get the best vocal during those.
And then I tell
them I'm now going to track the vocal. And often it's the warm-up tracks where they don't think they are working to tracks.
Right. Uh, working to,
Do you know what I mean? It's red light fever. I have it all the time. I've got, because our agency does a lot of recording of artists on video when they talk about products and stuff. The amount of top guys that have had, like I had a guy that's worked with Paul McCartney and Lady Gaga, put a camera in front of this guy and he went to pieces. Huh. And it's like, so because as I say, it's red light fever. You suddenly can't speak. You can't sing. The amount, I remember the first time I really did a proper vocal session on an album I worked on in 2000, and I probably spent an hour messing around with my headphone mix going, it's too loud, it's too quiet, it's too loud, it's too quiet. It's just like, because I got so wrapped up in the whole process, I forgot just to sing.
Yeah.
Some of my best albums were live albums, because I just, there wasn't anything there to do that to me.
Sure.
I was just performing. I sometimes think you need a pile of fans on the other side of the glass as well that they can play to, some bands. Some bands, you put them in the studio and they're rubbish, and yet live, they're fantastic. Have you experienced that, Kevin?
Perhaps not as black and white. Well, it's kind of the opposite. It can go both ways. But I was just going to say that two things that we do here is, one is communication. I have what I call the 1 second rule, so that if once the take stops, there's no more than 1 second that passes before the talkback button is pushed and you say, what did you think of that? Hey, you know, that kind of thing, you know?
So I don't think there's a conversation going on in the room next door.
Yeah, or like, are they talking about me or anything like that? Yeah. And the other thing is, we take this to the psychological level here, is where when we have a new singer we haven't worked with before, we place the mic purposefully low, lower than we think, because then you're raising it up to the person. It's not this giant thing coming down from the top thinking like, why am I short? Or, you know, I mean, that may seem silly, but there's some artists here who are notoriously short that we do this for, and we do it across the board. You know, I even teach it so that it's, you know, that the mic always comes up to the talent, not from the top.
So they sing down on the mic, basically, rather than up to the
mic. What I'm saying is, like, let's say you have it boomed in, right? So it's flat, and but you lower the clutch so that the whole rig moves down. So it'd be basically like pointing at your chest when you stand up to it. And then you go to the talent comes in, you go, oh, let me fix that for you, and you raise it up to their mouth area or whatever, so that you're coming up from the bottom, not coming down from the top, where it's like, you know.
Yeah,
and you think that has a psychological effect of kind
absolutely,
of like,
absolutely.
They feel taller than they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because artists are fragile. I mean, I worked with an artist once who didn't want to even be seen. She had me build a gobo house around her and didn't want to be seen in the room. And I did the same thing that I was doing with you. She says, whatever you do, do not record me until I say yes. So of course I recorded her because that's just what you do. So then she started singing for real, and we went on for like 3 or 4 takes, and it was horrible. And I said, can I play you something? Can you come in here? And she came in, she sat down, and I said, let me just play you something. And I played her the earlier takes, and she goes, well, that sounds really good. And I go, the only problem is that that's when you didn't want me to record you. So I just wanted you to know what your own head is doing to your performance is that you're way better than you give yourself credit for. And that kind of broke the ice. And then after that, she totally trusted me and then praised the results we got at the end, because she opened up and everything was better, you know, so.
It's making them comfortable.
Yeah, understanding how vocals work as well is really important. Understanding the basics of how the voice works is so essential if you're going to be producing vocals. So, for example, if somebody's singing flat, it's probably because they're not getting enough breath in and they're running out of breath so that they flatten out. And understanding things like that, because I used to sing in a choir, so that's how I know. All those kind of little things. So Dan's married to a vocal coach. So I think it's essential that we almost need some of that training as producers to know. So you can help somebody who's flat. Mm-hmm. So you don't just say, okay, we'll auto-tune the shit out of that afterwards. You say, hey, just breathe, just take a deeper breath before you go for that. And and I used to use the psychology of telling people to sing beyond what they thought the note's pitch was. And that would get them in tune, because they were kind of slightly flat. And if I told them to sing above what they thought the note was, they were hitting the notes.
Hmm.
So there's a lot of kind of vocal coaching that can go on in a session, I find.
Yes, very much so. I think it's important that we should all, you know, learn a little bit of vocal mechanics. I'll give you an example. Many years ago when I was a student, I was getting into obviously Pro Tools, and we were learning drum miking and mixing, and it was just over my head because I wasn't a drummer, so I got some drum lessons, and it just demystified drums. And then all of a sudden I could understand then what we were doing in the studio with drums, because I was confident with the instrument. And since I've been with my wife, and all we do is talk music production and vocal stuff, I feel that what I'm doing with vocals with my clients is massively improved, because she's sort of like whispers in my ear going, next time you got that client in, just tell him to do this with his voice. Okay, brilliant. And yeah, pass a bit of information on. And yeah, that was a really good tip. Thanks for that. I didn't know that. And she's actually worked with some of my clients. I've said to them, look, go spend an hour with my wife and she will teach you these things that will help you sing those parts in your songs. Lo and behold, they come back. Boom. Nice and easy. That's all part of vocal production. How to get a vocalist to actually just come out of their skin, like what Kevin was saying about his experience there with that lady, and also how to just get the vocals sounding great at source, because microphone and plugins and all that sort of stuff is way down the list. It's great vocalist that's confident with their parts and a great song in a room that sounds decent. Everything is second to that.
Anyway, let's move on.
The Pro Tools Expert Community Feedback is brought to you with the kind support of RSPE Audio Solutions. Great people and great prices.
RSPE is proud to announce the new ASC Nano Attack Wall. It's a mini version of the ASC Attack Wall that takes all of the acoustic benefits of its bigger brother and shrinks them down to fit on your desktop. Get a reliable, repeatable, and accurate sonic space that's extremely portable, so you can take it with you when you move or work in another studio. Learn more at RSPE's website with the link in the show notes down below.
Okay, we've got one piece of community feedback from George Majeris. With regards to James's recent issue with his MacBook Pro, I'd like to share my story. My MacBook Pro mid-2010 started crashing randomly a while ago. Although never when using Pro Tools, the crash report said that the GPU was to blame, GPU panic or something along those lines. Local one and only Apple premium hotshot, expensive as hell, but most flexible reseller would not even look at it. It's 2010. That's a legacy computer, end of life of support and everything. This reminds me of a former managing director bringing a broken television set into the repair shop, asking the repair guy, Mr. Fritz, how can this television set be broken? It only has 10 years. Okay, that was in the early 90s, eight-year-old end of life. We seem to accept that nowadays. No way, Jose. I was just lucky to find a tech guy from Berlin on eBay that repairs logic boards, and for something like €130, including shipping, my MacBook Pro is alive and well again. And why should I get a new one? I changed the battery for a new one myself in 5 minutes, since the above-mentioned reseller would not sell me a battery. Changed the hard drive for an SSD and maxed out the RAM. It's an i7 and it works perfectly well with the current version of Pro Tools. I often use it as a backup recorder. I saved a lot of money. Side notes, an alternative Mac support company suggested I should just I should not use Trim Enabler on the Samsung SSD, since that may well cause trouble and that my drive is perfectly okay for this computer. So it seems that your statement about Angel Bird drives may not be 100% correct. I might be wrong, though. Anyways, thank you for the never-ending good stuff you guys deliver week after week. Thanks for the story there, George.
Just coming on that, did I tell you something? I tell you, partly it's cultural as well. I know that you think that 8 years is not a long time for an end of life, and I fully understand the cost differential once you've got this guy to fix it from Berlin. But I remember a story being told to me in the 80s, where a friend of mine was out in Japan, and he'd walk past dustbins with old VCR players and television sat on them that had been replaced with a newer version. And there are certain cultures that regard the idea of constantly repairing things somewhat odd, that you just buy the latest and greatest one. So it's not just about, but I think that your dealer was a bit of a dick, if you're really honest, if you said it was end of life. He might have been so tied up with Apple red tape that he couldn't fix it if he wanted to. But it sounds like you found a thing in the end. Did I tell you that my 4K LG monitor, which cost me £1,000, not dollars, but thousands, got fried by the local electric company when the power went off recently?
Yeah, it did, yeah.
Got it repaired for £140 for collection and return and a new motherboard. So That was well worth repairing. So there are good people out there still that will repair this gear. But I agree with you. Why would I spend £1,000 replacing that monitor? Which I couldn't anyway, because they don't make it anymore. I couldn't get one. When, as you say, there's plenty of people out there that will do work on Macs. And I've taken Macs apart and put new batteries in them and new drives. Can't speak to the trim thing. Because that was a mic thing. So when Mike's back, we will, perhaps the trim question will come up again. Anyway, thanks for your feedback. Here's some questions from the community. The first one is from Alex Reverberi. What a great name in the audio industry. The next question will be from John Compressi. Reverberi. Should get him a job at Exponential Audio. Hello, gentlemen. Your old friend Alex Reverberi here. The good news is that the old subscription renewal issue seems to be finally gone, cross fingers. The bad news is that since updating to Pro Tools 2018, every time I open a session coming from another studio, all my preferences reset to default. I have to reassign my peripherals, plugins, color coding, etc. Even the audio engine defaults to Pro Tools Aggregate IO. We'll delete that for a start. Anyway, I don't know why they even put it in there. I hate the Aggregate IO interface. I'm never quite sure why they even bother. Any ideas? Thanks again in advance for keeping me entertained every time I get stuck in traffic here in Los Angeles, which is pretty much every day. Anybody? Is this a bug in 2018 or is this something else?
I don't think it's a bug, but some more information would be useful.
Well, he gave it to Eric on our support team. He's running High Sierra 2018, two UAD Apollos with SoftTube Console 1 and PreSonus Fader Port. All the sessions came from Pro Tools 10 HD. So there's, I don't know if problem. Do you think that's the problem?
I think that's the problem, because I've had loads of issues loading old sessions from Pro Tools 10 sessions. So stuff that I've worked on 6 years ago, if I do have to open it now, I do get issues. But nothing like this. This is a very, very bizarre one. Does it happen when you load sessions that you created in your current version of Pro Tools? If not, I would probably try and reinstall Pro Tools and see what happens. That's where I would be if this was happening to me. I'm not saying that you should, but if it was me, that's what I would do. Russ, what would you try first?
I wouldn't try, but if this was an ongoing issue, then I'd probably create an empty session with all your settings right and then import session data instead of opening it as a session. Then you've also got a copy of the session that you're opening as well. It's a workaround. Session. It's not brilliant, yeah. But you can import with import session data. I think everything can come across, plugins, the lot.
Yeah.
Because this is almost at system level. This isn't at session level. This is why I'm scratching my head slightly.
This is happening before. This is Pro Tools. Yeah.
This is Pro Tools stuff, not session stuff. Yeah. Kevin, you got any thoughts on this?
No, I've never had this happen. I've had recurring problems. The most recent one we have here on multiple systems, and we're thinking it might be a DigiLink cable issue, or perhaps that we're using 192s along with HDIOs, is that we get a message that says Pro Tools has detected that certain interfaces are no longer...
Dropped off the system.
Dropped off the system, you quit is what you get, right? And it's just random. It'll happen at lunch or it happens sometimes when we insert a USB hard drive in, we've noticed that. So, and it's unpredictable. So...
That sounds like a bus issue.
Yeah,
isn't it?
That's why I said yeah. I think it's, and it could be that we're mixing and matching. We have a lot of old 192s here. We use it as utility stuff, just send off to for queues and things like that, where we don't really care. We're not recording it. So, and we can use the better converters for the recording channels. So, but that's been happening around here on a couple systems. But that's the only thing I've really had a problem with along this level. But this is pretty serious what he's talking about.
Yeah, the only thing I would suggest is why don't you download the Trasher Preferences program and see if that, and get that to do a kind of gut the whole preferences, start again and see if it does it after that. It could be a corrupted preference file. That's where I'd start looking. But it's not session level. This is Pro Tools pre-session level. And it seems, as you say, but every time you open a session, it triggers this kind of reset to defaults.
Yeah,
be interested as well. We don't get, go ahead, sorry.
No, I was going to say, if you just Google Pro Tools Preference Helper, you can get the latest Gates update.
Gates, that's it. Yeah, friend of Bill. Next question.
Okay, from Mirko Milan Milosevic. It says, hi, Pro Tools expert. My name is Mirko. I'm a jazz pianist, music theory teacher, producer, and sound designer using Pro Tools, Logic Pro X, and Mainstage 3. My setup is a late 2011 17-inch MacBook Pro with a 4-core 2.4 gig CPU, 16 gigs of RAM, which is maxed out, and a 1 terabyte SSD. I don't think any newer MacBook Pro could be maxed out more like this one, which is the key to this answer, I will say. A Focusrite Pro 40 audio interface with FireWire connection to the MBP. My problem is I'd like to control 3 keyboards using Mainstage with a dozen instances of Kontakts, Omnispheres, Trillions, Massives, FM8s, say no more, say no more, as you guys say.
Thirsty VIs.
So 16, when you're doing that many keyboard, like multiple instruments of Omnisphere, et cetera, and 16 gigs of RAM, which in my world is enough when you're just recording live, but for that kind of thing, you need 32 or
more.
Bigger computer. So
yeah, I think the fan should give him some clues when that thing kicks in.
If it's louder than
it's
your audio,
suffocating.
Right. Yeah. Turn up your speakers.
What I would also say though is CPU spikes aren't necessarily to do with your system not working properly. It could be bad plugins. CPU spikes. Are you saying spikes, or are you saying it just the CPU gets to maxed out? Because there's a question there about the CPU spikes. Another alternative is you get yourself a old Mac Mini or something like that, and you get yourself a copy of Vienna Ensemble Pro, which is brilliant. And over a cable, over a network cable, you could have all your VIs playing on a separate computer, and when you use them, they just look like they're playing in what you're working in, because it's a plug-in. It's magic. And it means basically you can use two computers then. Or you go and buy a new computer and then you use Vienna Ensemble Pro to run the second computer that you've already owned, so you haven't wasted any money. But I've got 32 gig of RAM. So I think, is it spiking? Because that's the big question for me. Spiking is about a data choke that then gets unchoked again.
And it can happen when you load VIs as well. You know, you load a piano VI, for instance, and, you know, Pro Tools goes, whoop. And if you've got a load of things already loaded as well, running, so it could just be the way that you're using it. Are you in playback when you are loading VIs and then it goes, whoa, I'm not having that? Because I know this from my wife's Mac Mini. She tries to do what I do on my Mac Pro, which is whilst I'm in playback, I'm loading up an instance of Superior Drummer or something like that. And it's no problem for my Mac Pro. Her Mac Mini, it goes, nope, stop. What are you doing? Playback. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It could just be something like that. Maybe you just should try a different way. Don't rush your machine. Slow down a little bit. Let it settle and then start playback.
Yeah. But as I say, a newer machine 7 years on is going to help because it's going to have better architecture in it. The bus architecture is going to be better and faster and smoother. Things like Thunderbolt are going to help in that process when you're actually doing using an interface because you'll get less data spikes as well.
And for samples, to put samples on it as well. The libraries, you can put onto an external drive over Thunderbolt. That's going to
help. It doesn't mention external drive here, and so that's another choke point. You've got so many choke points on your existing system. That's why you're seeing, as I'd call them, spikes, which is what you describe them as, which are quick. Or it could be a bad plugin that's doing it as well. But you are pretty. There's some pretty hungry stuff on that system. I think you're doing well, all things considered. Jacob Oldenburg. Hi, do you know of an app plugin that would stream audio selected devices? Let's say I'm doing a commercial and my client really needs it to sound good on a mobile devices. The way I have to do it now is to export the video, put it in my Dropbox on mine, and play from mobile. It would be awesome to stream directly and be able to mix with the phone as a monitor.
Yeah. There's a really cool little app called Listen To. It's by a company called Audio Movers. I did a review of this last year. It's a subscription thing. It's quite cheap. I can't remember off the top of my head. Let me find out. Basically, it's a plugin you put in Pro Tools, put it on your master, and then you send a link to, you can send it to a client or you can send it to yourself, and you put that into a web browser, and hey presto, you are streaming your Pro Tools outputs to anything like a MacBook Pro, iPhone, iPads, anything with an internet connection. Really useful little app. Weekly, $3.99. Monthly, $9.99. Yearly, $99. I think that's the one that James is on, and he loves this app. I think it's really cool. So, yeah, you could, in essence, stream straight to an iPhone that's next to your mix position and turn down your main monitors, and you're mixing through your iPhone.
Source Elements, of course, we're using it for the show every week, but they make lots of streamable apps.
Of course, yeah.
They do. Shame Alan's not on the show tonight because he's Mr. Source Elements. But check out their site. You can download demos there. That's another way you could do it. Another way you could do it that's like a free way of doing it is that you create a dummy web page with a link on it that you basically keep updating the audio to. So that if you click on that link, it's playing whatever's coming up. But it's got to be live. You've got to be able to live stream it. So those are some thoughts there.
There's one more, actually, I just thought of. Audified have a plugin that emulates things like this. So I can't remember what it's called. Mix something.
Mix Checker.
Mix Checker, that's it.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, it's perfect. It is for this, isn't it? It's for
exactly this. So you can run your mix through something that sounds like a MacBook Pro, iPhone, and then you don't have to muck about with your iPhone because, you know, you shouldn't really be playing with your phone anyway when you're working. That's just me.
Two others. Sonox make, which is totally different, but that Sonox make their, what's their streaming plugin called? Well, I'm looking for that. That you can audition the audio before you bounce it out in different formats, so you can hear it.
Oh, yeah, you can hear it different.
They were
different
the first to come out with that too. Yeah,
Isotope
have it. That rings a bell.
Codec Toolbox. You're exactly right. It is Codec Toolbox, and that allows you to audition them at different levels.
Yeah, and Ozone 8 has that as well. Isotope mastering software that has that thing in there, so you can hear what it sounds like at different MP3 qualities.
You could always, of course, use Futzbox as well from Mac DSP, which has got loads of emulations of different playback devices, which is often used for film. But at the same time, I think it does have phone in there, so you can see what it sounds like on like a cell phone and stuff like that. So that's an idea, all those kind of things. Anyway, let's move on.
Pro Tools Expert Podcast is created using Source Connect Now from Source Elements. Register now for your free account at now.source-elements.com.
Have you ever tried to do interviews over the internet with apps like Skype? You will know how hit and miss the audio quality and connection can be. And even on a good day, it isn't really good enough for a long form interview. We now use Source Connect Now, which offers ISDN equivalent quality audio using a Chrome browser. No software to install. To get your free account, follow the link in the podcast notes. Russ, what's your find of the week?
This is sponsored by our friends at UJam.
UJam Instruments plugins are your studio companions. Always on call when you want to write, play, and record tracks. Take seat in the producer's chair and tell your player what you need. This means a maximum of musical and sonic integrity and versatility, and a minimum of your precious energy required to get there. Discover our virtual instruments at ujam.com.
Kevin, what's your find of the week?
My find of the week is the new Krotos Reformer Pro update that's coming out. And it has a bevy of new things that, what's perfect about this plugin, because I'm going to review it, it's great for sound designers, musicians, DJs, composers, mixers, and even film scoring, because you can trigger sounds from outside inputs that are, MIDI triggers or automation. It's like the old CV voltage kind of thing, but it's you can do all kinds of triggering of crazy sounds, and it generates all these things. And the video I watched that was really cool was the guy was sampling all kinds of wacky things he bought at a hardware store, just tapping on pipes and things like that, and put it all together, and then had the engine reshape it. And then he had a handheld microphone in studio, and he was just huffing and puffing into it, and it created this whole new landscape from the plugin based on his triggering. So it's really, really interesting how plugins have, and I've seen a lot of this lately. You can see it with a lot of companies that are just taking, the basic EQ, like for instance, the Waves Factory Spectre that I reviewed not too long ago. It's taking the basic EQ model and blowing it up into something that's completely new, and that's what they've done here. So I think it's an awesome product and something I'm really looking forward to digging into.
That's interesting, because I've never used any of their gear, but I think we're checking it out, and I think Alan and you, Kevin, are going to be reviewing that kind of stuff. So thanks for that. Dan, what's your find of the week?
Russ, I thank you for this. Filmic Pro, that amazing video capture app for iPhone. I got myself a new iPhone X recently because my old iPhone 6, the phablet that you called it all those years ago, the battery started going on it. So I thought, okay, let's get a new phone. I wasn't really bothered. It's just another iPhone. And then I realized it can do 4K. And I thought, oh, let's give that a go. Let's see how good an iPhone camera is now. Well,
I know.
Jesus. Isn't it good? And then you put me onto Filmic Pro, and I thought, whoa, this is actually, I'd say, as good as my Canon with my expensive lenses. Obviously, the 4K is a nice thing to have, but actual picture quality and balance of colors and things, it's really, really, really good. And I've done a few Pro Tools Expert videos with it now. And it's so quick. It's not cumbersome to use an iPhone, and the app is brilliant. Lock in the exposure and focus, things like that.
It turns an iPhone into a DSLR,
because
it gives you locked aperture. It does focus pulling as well. Have you seen that?
Yes,
you can give it two focus points and hit a button, and it focus pulls on, like, if you're doing gear porn shots. It's perfect.
That
and the stabilizing arm I bought for my iPhone. It's, as I say, it's just brilliant. I'm using it on shoots all the time.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
And what's nice about shooting in front of an iPhone is it doesn't feel intimidating. When you've got a big Canon and big old lens on it and all that, and that's in front of you, and you're like, we talked about red light fever earlier, and you can get that when you're in front of a DSLR, because it feels a bit like, I've really got to present here. But we put an iPhone up, and it's like, this is easy. This is just, that's just a phone. Lets your guard down. Which is
nice.
What's it? £15 app or something like that, wasn't it? Really cheap. Worth every penny. Russ, what's your find of the week?
We spoke about it at the top of the show because it's part of the promo from Universal Audio, but I checked out the Antares Auto-Tune Real Time. I'm not a massive fan of Auto-Tune at the best of times. And I thought Antares have made this saying that it sort of takes away all the kind of stereotype thoughts about auto-tune, which is basically steppy vocals and it's not very tolerant. And I thought I'd throw a really tough vocal at auto-tune to see how it coped. So I got a great jazz vocal from Jess, who works with me. There's slides all over the place. There's quite a lot of vibrato in places. I mean, quite extreme vibrato. And I threw it at auto-tuning, put it in conventional mode, and then started adding in these, some of these new features, which kind of deal with things like the speed it checks it at. So it can now distinguish between short notes and long notes for its tracking. It can also humanize stuff. And I tried it, and I was blown away. So much so that when you get it set right, you wonder if the auto-tune is actually working.
Yeah, yeah.
So I tested it by dragging the vocal down to another track, then putting them both on together, and lo and behold, quite a lot of chorusing going on, which means that the tuning is changing. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And of course, because it's a UAD-powered plugin, you can use it live. If you want to get down like a sort of... again, talking about making vocalists feel better about their performances, you could track a vocal with this so they don't hear it. They hear the original, of course. I wouldn't ever try and put auto-tune on somebody's monitor mix.
That'd be difficult.
While you're tracking it, if you could just put a touch of it just to help out a bit, you could probably get a great performance down without too much pain. So check it out. As I say, it's the Antares auto-tune. There's lots that have come along since then, like the Synchro Arts Revoice Pro, and of course this Dan's favorite from
Melodyne.
Yeah, but check it out. Watch the video and you'll see it's how impressive it is. Anyway, we've run out of time, so it's good night from me.
It's good night from me.
And it's good night from me.
Good night.